are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
You have an uncanny ability to make me sound lazy.
I definitely hustle. That's for damn sure. I'm working my ass off.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
When Howard Bender hired me to come do the article for Fantasy Alarm, I thought he was like really hooking me up as a friend and as a buddy. Because
we are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Tim and I, you know, have hung out outside of like industry stuff, and yeah, this was obviously some sort of cruel joke.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Join me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
Good, man. I don't know if anyone followed my Twitter feed the last day or so, but it was a hectic Sunday. Stressful, but it came out on top, and a little bit more money in my wallet than I had previously, so pretty excited.
So, yeah, you had a close head-to-head matchup, so I've heard.
I won by one strikeout, and my opponent had the pitcher that was pitching the Sunday night baseball game, Tyler Skaggs, and if he would have got four strikeouts, I would have lost because I would have lost the tiebreaker. And for some reason, Mike Socha pulled him at 84 pitches after five innings with three. So I got lucky. But I'll take it. Need a little bit of luck every now and then.
Yeah, that is pretty lucky. I am in a dogfight right now at the top of the Barf League. We should probably just, you know, we got a week left. Let me ask you, how are you doing in your in the majority leagues? You won one at least. You don't win any others?
No, I made the playoffs in another one in a big dynasty league, but I got eliminated in the first round.
I'm in, I can't remember, I think I'm in 13 leagues this year, which was a little bit of a tick down for me, though I think next year I'm going to tick it down even further, even though you and I are going to be in a new dynasty league together. Which
I'm excited for that, yes.
Yeah, we've been
more
both,
details to come for sure. But
yeah, we've
I'm,
been both
really
invited
excited.
To a real interesting new league. I don't know that the people running it have announced that they're doing
so.
It yet, so I won't let the cat out of the bag before I'm supposed to. It should involve some people that most people who follow fantasy baseball and those of us who write in the industry and podcast in the industry should involve a lot of industry folk. And it is it's a very large and competitive dynasty league. So, and I've been wanting to get into a new dynasty league.
Me too.
I'm in a couple that I've been in for a while. I'm going to probably be dropping out of the original Friends of Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League at the end of this year because it no longer is really the Friends of Fantasy Benefits group that is in it.
No.
And it's a free league, and it's just I think it's lost a little bit of the fun
over
the
stale.
Last year. Yeah. And then I'm probably going to be dropping out of a keeper league or two just to kind of pare down the amount of leagues I have. But so 13 leagues, I'm going to win at least three. And I am
nice.
In a huge dogfight in the Barf League in which I was absolutely crushing people all year long. I mean, I have not been out of first place since, I believe, late April. And at one point, I had a 30-point lead in a 12-team roto league.
Yeah, that's insane.
This guy, who's a big NFBC player, has reeled me in. I literally right now have a point-and-a-half lead currently,
man.
As we speak. I should be able to still pull it off, but Jake Junis kind of screwed me tonight.
You're relying on Jake Junis and
Well, I mean, at this point,
I feel your pain.
Yeah, I mean, at this point in, you know, in fantasy, and something maybe we could talk about before we jump into our main topic for the night. You know, I mean, you have to, like, there's a part of you that wants to ride the players that got you there, but you also have to take into account that it's the end of the season. A lot of the playoff spots are wrapped up or going to be wrapped up here shortly. And, you know, the good players on the good teams may be getting sat a little bit more to get them rest for the playoffs. You're definitely not going to see guys like Max Scherzer and Corey Kluber pitch very much in their last outing.
Yeah, this last start they had was probably it.
You know, I mean, for instance, I've got Dylan Bundy on that team.
Oops.
They shut him down for the year, so I'm dropping him.
Speaking of, Sean and I have a bone to we have something to talk about.
And I mean, so this is the time. I mean, we've got exactly a week left. You know, if you include the games tonight, you have 7 days worth of games left. So six when everybody's going to probably be hearing this podcast on Tuesday as we release this late Monday night. You know, you're gonna have to make decisions that you would think maybe 2 months ago, 3 months ago would be insane decisions, but you're going to have to drop some guys that you wouldn't want to necessarily drop otherwise.
You got to drop some of the horses that brought you to where you are.
Mm-hmm. And especially if you're done with fab, like if you only have weekly fab or weekly pickups and it's already passed, there's no shame in dropping a Max Scherzer because no one else can pick him up and use him against you. And he may only get 3 or 4 innings in his last start. And if you're playing in a quality start league, that doesn't do you a ton of good necessarily. Or, you know, dropping the Dylan Bundys of the world or dropping all your closers because you're in desperate need of strikeouts and can't make any moves in saves. I mean, these are things that you got to do. And I think not everybody makes those kind of huge moves at the end that can really make the difference in a head-to-head points or head-to-head categories or even a roto league.
Yeah, I mean, not to pound on this subject too much, but I you know, my league that I just won was, it's only a 12-team league, but the pitching depth that teams have, people hoard pitching, so I consider it like a 15-team league when it comes to pitching, if that makes sense, just because it's a lot deeper. It's way easier in this league to find an offensive player than it is a pitcher on the wire. It just doesn't happen. And, you know, I was trying to get every advantage I could in looking into streaming guys, and there's a lot of bad matchups this past week. So what I ended up doing, I won by one strikeout, keep in mind, is I didn't have any streamers I liked, didn't want to take a zero, so I picked up David Robertson for an inning, and he got me a strikeout and worked a scoreless seventh, and I won by 1K. I like to think that's part of the reason.
Yeah, so I mean, it may be. You know, things like I'm debating dropping like a Lorenzo Cain right now because I don't have any room to move one way or another in runs and stolen bases.
Yeah.
But I can make up room and power. And, you know, maybe like I'm looking right. I'm literally on my team webpage right now going to the waiver wire, looking at guys on the waiver wire with power that might play over the next couple days. You know, is it smart to maybe drop him for a Matt Joyce or a Brandon Moss? Now, that seems insane, but Brandon Moss hitting 314 with 4 home runs and 14 RBIs over the last 15 days.
And Matt Joyce is getting more playing time with Matt Olson going down.
Yeah, so. I mean, so, you know, you've got to try to maybe make these decisions not based on name value, but based on what you need categorically. And so hopefully our listeners are astute enough. They've been listening to us and hearing us talk a little bit about this game theory throughout the year, that they're willing to make these moves and they're not afraid of necessarily, you know, getting laughed at by their compatriots, because at the end of the day, it's about taking home a title, right?
It is. I'd also be in favor of a lot of leagues. Like, I like the head-to-head format for the playoffs, like whether you do roto or not. I just like finishing with head-to-head in the playoffs. I think it's way more exciting. I'm also a proponent of locking rosters during that time period. And you can't add or drop anybody. And you kind of got to do with what you have, because it does change the rosters too much and kind of changes the flow of the league. So I'm a big proponent in minimal pickups toward the end, but my league allowed for five every week, so you're damn right I was maxing out those five, even though I don't like, you know what I mean, even though I don't agree with it. But
yeah, well, I mean, you got to take advantage. I mean, I have not made a ton of moves in this league that I'm referencing, the Barf League, which is the Bay Area Roto Fantasy League. It's a bunch of mostly, I'd say 9 of the 12 people are within the industry, and the other three, one is the guy who is the owner of the bar, and one of, I believe, his employees, and then one is the NFBC guy that I'm talking about that's trying to reel me in. But everybody else is industry league, and I mean, you know, I haven't made a ton of moves this year, but like right now, the last fab period is going to go off here in about 27 minutes, and I have 11 different bids to picking up different players.
Yeah, that's, so you got to do what you got to do.
You know, I mean, picking up guys from Garrett Richards to Matthew Boyd, you know, dropping James Paxton, dropping Dylan Bundy, dropping Juan Nicasio, you know, dropping virtually all my closers except for Kenley Jansen, because I'm trying to win a championship.
Yep, yep.
All right, well, that's enough about our teams, but I hopefully maybe there's something to be gleaned from that discussion. I want to move into kind of our topic for the night. And so we have a list of 10 guys, and they all have one thing in common. You and I have been participating in a series of mock drafts. There's four of them going on at once. I'm in all four. You're in one of them. I tried to make it so that way I was the only person in all of the drafts or in multiple drafts. One, because I'm running it, and so I need to be able to monitor and help people out with each individual draft. But two, I wanted to get as many different people involved in this as possible. And so this is these four mock drafts. They're all 15-team NFBC-style drafts. So two catcher leagues, standard rosters, five outfielders, corner, middle, nine pitchers. I gave everybody three bench spots. It's for the 2018 season. And the guys we're going to talk about tonight were 10 of the guys that had the kind of widest range of max and min pick. So I wanted to kind of focus on maybe some of these guys who were a little bit more polarizing, because I don't think it's that interesting to talk about Mike Trout and Jose Altuve both going 1-2 in all of the drafts. Or, I mean, you know, there's a little bit of an interesting discussion that could be had out of, you know, who four different guys went at pick three in four different drafts, which I thought was a little bit interesting. But, I mean, ultimately, I think the most interesting thing is seeing industry analysts, you know, some are really, really high on other guys, and on those same guys, other people in the industry are really, really low on them. And so I want to start with Andrew Benintendi. Andrew Benintendi has had a pretty good season. He's 2019, 20 home runs, 19 stolen bases, 276, 359, 435 triple slash. He has been one of the more polarizing guys within these mock drafts. He has a high pick, or well, a low pick, the you know, kind of early in the draft of pick 40. He went in two separate drafts. He went 40th overall. In the other two drafts, he went 72nd and 80th. So we have a span of 40 from the top to the bottom. So Matt, tell me what your thoughts on Andrew Benintendi are for next year, and where should he be going?
I think Benintendi represents kind of the rare rookie, in the sense that he did exactly as kind of advertised. You look at guys like Aaron Judge and Rhys Hoskins, who are, you know, blowing it out of the water, and then you look at Dansby Swanson, who's, you know, kind of on the other end of this of the spectrum. Benintendi, probably hit for a little bit more power than you might imagine, and this early on, anyways, in his career. But the K rate and the walk rates are kind of right where I expected them to be. The BABIP's right around league average, 270, 350, 420 is a good. It's a slash line. It's kind of where about where he's at, and he's exactly what you advertise, and I do think there's a little bit of upside going forward. I wouldn't be surprised if he's more of a 25 home run bat next year, but I don't know if the Steelers stick around at 20. I think they might drop a little bit, you know, as he moves up in toward the middle of the lineup more. But I like Benintendi a lot. But I kind of hedge more toward the 72 or 80 pick rather than 40. I think 40 is too high. I think 40 you're paying for the upside. I think 72 and 80, I don't know, the range isn't that huge. But I think 72-80 is you're getting fair price and you're giving yourself room to have an actual bargain. Hmm. So I go more toward that aspect of this.
I'm going to disagree with you.
Sure.
And which seems weird because I was probably one of the lower men on our site on Benintendi coming to the year. And I think for the most part, he's proved me wrong. I didn't see necessarily him getting to 2020. I definitely didn't see the power spike, though. I think there have been a lot of guys who have kind of spiked power-wise this year more than maybe we thought they would. I think that his past has shown that he's probably closer to a 285 to 290 hitter than he is the 275 we've got.
I could agree with that. And that's a significant difference. It doesn't sound like it, but it is.
It makes up a lot. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about, is he really that much different? I'm trying to find
Christian Yelich.
Yeah, Christian Yelich. Though, I mean, I think at this point, maybe he's better than Christian Yelich.
I would rather have Benintendi.
I mean, he's going to probably be on a better team top to bottom. He's going to definitely hit at the top or in the middle of one of the better lineups in baseball, you know, and Yelich's ADP is, technically Yelich's ADP is after his, which is interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, that is interesting.
I think it should Benintendi's be. Benintendi's average would be 58th overall. Yelich's is 64th.
I think that's accurate. I would rather have Benintendi, so I agree with that. But I think they're two comparable players. You see them comped everywhere. The numbers are very similar. I mean, Yelich is at 285 with 18 homers and 15 stolen bases compared to, you know, the 275 for Benintendi with 19 and 19. Mm-hmm. So they're very similar players. Yelich hits in the middle of the order in front of Stanton. So maybe sometimes that, you know, that's an added benefit. Benintendi hits a little bit lower. But for next year, I'm taking Benintendi, and it's close, but I lean that way.
And I don't necessarily, I don't want people to think that I'm saying, like, there is a huge upside to Benintendi, because I don't think there is. Like, I don't think Benintendi turns into a 20-30 or a 30-30 type guy.
Agreed. I think his upside is in the batting average stat.
Mm-hmm. But I think he is a guy that, you know, I may not even project him for 20 home runs next year, even though he got there this year, hit his 20th tonight.
Pinch hitter. Yep. Pinch hit home.
But, I mean, I think I would comfortably project him for 15-20 with a 285 average and feel pretty good about the floor on that. Like, even if he struggles next year, I don't think he's any worse than, like a Lorenzo Cain.
Yeah, I agree with you. I ended up getting Lorenzo Cain in our mock draft pretty late. I thought that was a good value, but no, I'm with you. There's not a lot. Benintendi's kind of the boring player, but the good player, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, he's the anti Bradley Zimmer.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Let's move on and talk about Craig Kimbrel. Craig Kimbrel has put up 35 saves this year, a 1.34 ERA. Over 16 strikeouts per nine. He's been vintage Craig Kimbrel. And in some ways, almost better than some of those vintage seasons of Craig Kimbrel. He's closing on one of the best teams in baseball, in the Red Sox. He was another guy that is very... very polarizing, a min pick of 46 overall, and in one of the mocks, he has yet to go.
Which, that's crazy.
Considering we are at pick, I believe, 83. is a tad bit shocking that he is still on the board.
Yeah, that's...
So what are your thoughts on Kimbrel? I mean, you don't have to give me necessarily where you think he should go overall, but where is he among the other closers?
I think he's solidly behind Kenley Jansen's for me still. And he's neck and neck with Chapman with injury concerns for Chapman. So I'd probably say third. Kimbrel will be third, my third reliever going into next season. And I think I contemplated, I'm trying to pull up our draft right now. I contemplated taking Kimbrel. I'm trying to pull up exactly where it was. I ended up with trying to figure out where he went in the mock that I'm in. Kenley Jansen went 66.
Kimbrel went 94th.
Yeah, and I took Garrett Cole 91 and Lorenzo Cain 90. Instead of Garrett Cole, I contemplated taking Kimbrel there. I didn't. Ultimately, I think I like Garrett Cole a little bit next year to bounce back. I end up getting Wade Davis about 20 picks later, which I'm fine with that. Wade Davis has been phenomenal this season too. But Kimbrel is probably going to be a guy I don't end up with very much. He was the third closer off the board. Chapman went 86th in this particular mock. And I always kind of stay out of the first-tier closers, and I consider those three in a tier. And I always kind of stay out of the big tier. Like, even going into this year, I took guys like O and Ken Giles, who were kind of in the second or even third tier, and it worked out pretty well. I mean, obviously the O thing didn't go very well, but I nabbed several other closers in that tier, and they held up for me. It's kind of rolling the dice a little bit, but I'm never going to pay for the best closer. But I would like to get two of the top 15 or so. That's kind of the game plan for me going into every draft.
Considering this year has been a little bit of a weird year in terms of closers, not because players got replaced. For the most part, I think this has been one of the more steady years in terms of players.
At the top it has, yeah.
Yeah,
the
I top. Mean... I mean, there aren't that many guys that have been replaced, out of the guys who were taken in the top 15 at closer this year. And so it's probably been a little bit steadier this year in the closing position. But we've had guys that we counted on just put up sub their years. You know, you mentioned Chapman. Chapman has not been great, or he's not been Chapman-like, even though the numbers aren't that bad. Guys like Edwin Diaz have not
just
been,
looking at him.
Yeah, who we thought they might be.
Mark Melanson.
Mm-hmm. Mark Melanson was atrocious before, eventually getting hurt and going on.
Kelvin
the
deal. Herrera lost the job.
So, do you think that this will be a trend where closers are not taken quite as early as they have been in the last few seasons?
I think this is a boring answer, but I think the top five or so are going to go normal, and then there's going to be a big gap. Mm-hmm. And there might not be anybody like Zach Britton's still on the board in my mock, and I'm not interested in taking him. And if I pick next,
Edwin Diaz
still
on the board,
Cody Allen.
On the board, Roberto Osuna's still on the board.
I think those guys are going to drop. I wouldn't be surprised if there's another 20 picks or so before one of those guys goes off the board. So we're talking about around about pick 150. I think there's a big tier. I probably took Wade Davis a little earlier, being the first mock draft of the season. I probably could have waited and grabbed somebody else and then grabbed Davis or Cody Allen or Britton or Osuna, one of those guys that falls.
Mm-hmm.
But that's probably the better play. But I think the top tier closers are going to go normal, but I think there's going to be a large gap, and I think you're going to be getting a lot of closers pretty cheap in rounds 12, 13, 14.
All right. Let's move on and talk about Ryan Braun, who, again, another polarizing player in these mocks. let's see. He's his min pick was 36th overall, and his max pick so far is 75th, but there is still one mock where he hasn't gone, and we are entering kind of I think we're on pick 75, so wherever he goes in this mock will probably be his max pick. That's a spread of 39 picks. What are your thoughts on Ryan Braun for next year?
I don't know what to make of him. The counting stats aren't as phenomenal as you'd like. 17 homers, 12 steals, 270, 345, 501 slug. Power is down from a little bit from last year, which in this kind of era is – this season is kind of glaring. Everything he's done across the board everywhere. I know he's got the past issues with the PEDs. I don't really want to get into that too much, but you wonder how much of that was kind of propping him up, keeping him on the field. And that seems to be the problem. His per-plate appearance production from accounting stat-wise – is down, but it's not significantly down. But the number of at-bats is way down. And plate appearances down from the last three seasons, and that's where the big dent in his numbers are coming from. Always in the back of the mind, despite where the Brewers are in the standings, you would think going into next year they're going to be competitive again. You still think in the back of your mind they could still move Braun because they do have Lewis Brinson, Domingo Santana, Brett Phillips, Keon Broxton. They got other guys that rotated in, Hernan Perez and stuff. They might be better off moving Braun for an arm or something. But you wonder what you can get for someone like Braun, who's clearly in the started the decline phase, I think, this year. He's still a very useful guy. I would much rather have Benintendi. I'd much rather have Yelich, who we talked about earlier. I'd rather take both of those guys over Braun. I'm probably the minority there. But that's where I lean as far as that. So that, I think I'm closer to about the pick 75 range on Braun than the upper tier.
Yeah, I'm probably with you. I think age is definitely starting to catch up with Braun a little bit. I don't think that contract is still – I think it's easier to move than maybe it was 3 or 4 years ago because salaries have all –
still productive, yeah.
But I think coming off of this year, you'd be selling really low on him even though he's got 3 years left on his deal plus an option year for 2021.
I think he's destined to be on the Angels. Mm-hmm.
Plus, I mean, he's 30. He's going to be 34 entering next season. I don't know that anybody is going to be willing to take on that money. And if they do, they're going to have to give up a ton of picks or a ton of prospects. So, I think that next year will be a bounce back year. But it's all about health with Braun. I mean, he's only played in 99 games this year. That's part of the issue is he's playing in, probably 30 less games than he has. Even 2014 through 2016, he's played in 135, 140, 135. Well, that's not even a full season, and now you're discounting another 30 games off of that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this comparison was made more so going into this season. I think it's a pretty easy choice for me, McCutcheon or Ryan Braun?
McCutcheon.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think they're kind of going very similar going into this season, so it's kind of nice to reflect back on that. And you look at two players who were supposedly in the decline phase. McCutcheon's had a nice bounce back year up across the board everywhere, while Braun's trending the wrong way. McCutcheon's 3 years younger. Surprisingly, Braun stole more bases this year than McCutcheon. I wouldn't bet on that going forward. Braun is always, being in the NL Central, being a fan of an NL Central team, I see Braun play a lot more, and I always think he's more prone to the random, you're in a weekly league and he might sit out 2 days a week. You know what I mean? Like, he's nicked up a lot, and it's showing this year in the numbers, slightly down across the board.
That's the interesting thing, because McCutcheon has gone below him in all of these drafts.
That's crazy to me. So is Lorenzo Cain. I'd rather have Lorenzo Cain than Braun.
Mm-hmm. McCutcheon has only gone in 3 of the 4 drafts. He's gone 74th, 73rd, and 82nd.
I think there's a caveat that we need to discuss with this website we're using for the draft. We have all smart industry people in this, so I'm not saying anything about anybody personally or anything, but a lot of the rankings we're using and the stats next to them are
based
pretty
on the
much,
2016 numbers.
Yes, so I think he's going to be a little bit higher in the default rankings than he should, and I think that's going to skew it a little bit.
Sure. But obviously I believe there have been a few auto drafts, and that's probably affected this a little bit. But that's one of the reasons I did 4 of these mocks. To kind of get a better kind of overall overarching look at this. But let's move on to a guy who has definitely been polarizing in this mock. And, he's been polarizing before.
The guy I will never own anywhere.
Yeah, But like, some people are still going back to the well on Xander Bogaerts.
Nope.
So tell me, why are you out on him, and where should he be ranked for 2018?
I guess my question to you is, where's the upside here? Runs, which is, makes sense. I could see that. But what's the home run upside? 2016, 21 homers? He doesn't hit the ball in the air enough. He's kind of scoffed at. He's been asked a lot. Well, would you about the launch angle and the fly ball revolution, and kind of had the attitude. Well, I'm here and I'm doing well, so why should I change? You know what I mean? Kind of. And I think it's hurting him right now. 15 stolen bases. I'm not betting on that again. I don't think Boston's going to run as much as they did this year, next year, as evidenced by my Benintendi. I think is going to be a little bit lower too. But I don't see the upside in Bogaerts. First of all, he's so polarizing. He's all over the map. What are you going to get, a power-first guy or a speed-first guy? Are you going to get a batting average guy or not? He's been wildly productive, I guess you could say, two out of the last three seasons, and he's done it completely different ways. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to predict. You know, us fantasy guys like a little bit of stability, especially in the top part of the draft, and he's just not giving that to you. It's hard to build a roster and know what you need, in a sense, with Xander Bogaerts, because he could hit 290, he could hit 260, he could hit 20 homers, he could hit 9. I mean, you know, it's hard to judge. It's in the best ballpark too, probably for one of the best ballparks for a right-handed pole hitter like him, and he's still not really putting up big gaudy numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is reason to believe he'll take a step
forward
next year.
I agree.
The 267 average, I think, will come up. I mean, he hit 320 and 294 the previous two seasons at the major league level. The issue for me is, in like you've mentioned, is in this big power atmosphere, he took a huge step back in power this year. And, I mean, if he's going to score less than 75 RBIs, that means he's not contributing in two of the five statistics. You know, he's going to contribute home runs. He's going to chip in enough steals to be useful. And, you know, his average should rebound back to the 290, you know, kind of 290, 285, 290 area, which is, you know, very good at the shortstop position. But if he's not going to contribute in two of the three categories, I don't know how you can take him as a top 75 player.
Agreed. He went 103 in the mock I'm in. I think that feels about right.
Chuck Anderson is the one who was the high man on him. Maybe I should bring him up back up again on the Wednesday show, so
yeah,
he can defend
his
pick a little bit. But he took him 58th overall.
Yeah, I'm not criticizing the pick. I mean, I don't want to get into something like that. But I question the upside. And if you're getting 2017 as the floor, then you're picking him too soon.
And I mean, I understand there is a drop off at shortstop. But shortstop is as deep as it's ever been.
Agreed. It's not as deep, though, as you think, but it is deeper than ever.
I think it is.
I don't know. It depends how much value you put in certain guys, I guess. I would rather pass up on someone like Bogaerts and take Tim Anderson later.
Yeah,
I'd rather take Tim Anderson,
Andrelton Simmons. You've got Zach Cozart. You've got
Tim Beckham.
Marcus Semien. You know, don't you met Marcus Semien in my presence?
Addison Russell.
You know,
Paul
I know
Young.
Chris Owings. You know, lost a lot of the year to injury, but you know, if he comes back healthy next year, are we, you know, discounting that he's going to not rebound? You know, Jorge Polanco has been sneaky good.
He's been great. I like him. Yes.
You've got a lot of guys who will be emerging from the minor
leagues.
Javi
Baez has got some upside.
Yeah, Baez has been great. It's just surprising they can't seem to find an everyday role for him.
Hey, keep running Ben Zobrist out there every day.
Yeah, I don't get it. and Addison Russell in his 240 average or whatever it's at.
He plays such a good defense.
But Baez plays great defense too. I mean, it's not like you're losing that much by, you know, putting Baez in there. You're gaining an extra, couple wins probably from just his offense alone. you know, if you're unwilling to sit Zobrist for some reason. So I think shortstop is better, you know. Then you've got Ozzie Albies, another home run tonight, you know. I mean, you've got guys at the position who are very, very interesting. And like I said, more guys coming up in the near future. Willie Adames.
You didn't mention Paul DeJong.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't mention my boy Orlando Arcia.
Oh, yeah. No, he's been legit.
So, yeah. I mean, I think shortstop doesn't have the drop-off that maybe we're used to. And I think you can wait a tad bit. Honestly, I prefer the drop-off at shortstop than I do to third base.
I was about to say that. Yeah, third base gets thinner rather quickly.
Yeah, all of a sudden, third base goes from, ooh, really nice, really, really nice, really nice, like in a 15-team league that we're in, to, oh my God, disastrous.
So, I mean, we're talking about the Cubs a little bit. I have a guy that I like a lot going into next season that for this purpose of this mock draft, I don't want to take because I want to see where he goes.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I know he doesn't play shortstop, but he can still put him in the middle infield spot. Ian Happ.
I've had him queued up in one of the mocks. I'm going to see if I can find it.
I considered taking him when I just took Wade Davis and Jose Berrios, but I want someone else to set the ADP because I haven't seen him go in any of them yet.
I had him queued up right below Rougned Odor when I took Odor 115th.
Okay, because I mean you know I'm diving more into the Statcast data this year and kind of backing up everything that it backs up the eye test, and Ian Happ is one of the top 15 fastest players in baseball,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't have the body type where you would think he would be. And the speed coming up, I'm looking at Fangraphs speed score for tool grade for Happ. It's a 55, and that's extremely light. It's more like a 70 if he's a top, 15 player. So, and that's just another dynamic to go with the power. The plate approach is strikes out a lot, but who doesn't? But he walks more than enough. He's Ben Zobrist with speed and power, and it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. The question becomes, where does a guy like that play? I mean, if they can't find Baez every day at bats, will they be able to find Happ every day at bats?
I think the easy solution is trade Zobrist and then trade the...
Yeah, but who's going to take on Zobrist's contract?
Trade that left fielder that they love so much.
I mean, unless the Cubs are going to eat the majority of that contract that Ben Zobrist has left...
It's only 1 year left, I think.
No, he's got 2 years left. He's owed $16 million next year, $12 million the year after. So, I mean, 2019 isn't that expensive. He's also got a full no-trade clause until next year.
He's not waving there.
Until 2019. In 2019, he's got a limited trade clause where he can block up to 8 teams.
We're talking shit about Ben Zobrist. I'm going to replay this podcast and when the Cubs win the World Series again this year and Zobrist knocks in the go-ahead run in Game 6 or something stupid. Because you know that's happening, right?
Well, of course it is, because this year he's batting .235, .323, .379 with 11 home runs and 2 stolen bases.
And he's going to be getting big at-bats in the postseason over guys like Baez and Happ, and then he's going to do that.
Yeah, and you know, what's shocking to me is he has about 70 less plate appearances than Javier Baez. Like, that's insane.
I mean, if it wasn't for, like, the ungodly performances of, like, you know, Hoskins and Clay and Bellinger, I think Ian Happ is, like, having a phenomenal rookie campaign that's going completely under the radar.
Well, and I think that – I think there are guys – there are rookies this year that are going to get overlooked coming into drafts next season because of that. I mean, you know, the Bradley Zimmers of the world,
Ozzie
the
Albies.
Ian Happs of the world, the Ozzie Albies, they're not going to shoot up draft boards in the way they may have in previous years because of the Aaron Judges and Hoskins and Bellingers of the world that are so, they've been so good. I mean, Matt Olson is another guy who's put up a fantastic season so far. I mean, and he's going, around pick 100. His season isn't that much different than a guy like Hoskins. He's doing it.
He's just doing it
in a worse hitter's environment on a worse offense.
Way less publicity behind it too.
So, I mean, it'll be really interesting because I think there are going to be guys that are slept on, which makes for really nice values. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to do this, because I want to highlight some of those values maybe next week.
If you are interested in doing more of these mocks, I want in because I there's way more – there's a lot of talent, and it's coming up in the – you're going to get some surprisingly really nice picks in the late rounds. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the play – and I know it's easy to say because I'm doing it, probably a bit of recency bias, but I don't remember the player pool being this deep.
I think it is hitter-wise. Pitcher-wise, not so much.
You're 100% right. Pitcher-wise, it's barren.
I'm looking on one of my teams.
You're picking through flaws already on pitchers, and we're in the ninth round. And you're like, I don't want that guy at all. And he's like the top pitcher on the board.
Yeah,
but hitters, there's so many, so much.
In the mock draft I just pulled up my team. I love the offense I'm putting together. I've made picks. I've got Goldschmidt, D. Gordon, Jake Lamb, Rougned Odor, Starling Marte, and Michael Conforto is my offense so far. Nice. And I even love my first starting pitcher, Robbie Ray. We talked about him briefly last week, and I talked about how the more and more I kind of dig into his second half numbers, the more and more excited I am about him for next season.
Yeah.
Kenley Jansen, the best closer in the game, no questions asked, I think, at this point. My next pick, I'm on deck right now, and my next pick has to be a pitcher.
Yeah.
And I'm not loving
Tanaka.
Yeah, I'm debating a Marcus Stroman here.
Mike Stroman. I almost took him, yeah.
Which I don't think is a bad number three type starting pitcher, but that's going to be my number two.
I took Berríos over Stroman just a couple picks ago. But, I mean, you look at my offense, I have Mike Trout, so... that lets me do a lot of things, taking Trout number one, but it also ensures that I miss out on one of the top four pitchers, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because I do want one of those top four guys. Because for me, it's a huge drop-off in the tiers.
Yeah, and I picked sixth, and Kershaw went fourth, which meant I either had to
reach a little bit on
a Scherzer or not get one. Because, by the time it came back around to me in the second round, actually, Kluber was available, and I passed on him for D. Gordon.
I think you did all right there. D. Gordon is a very unique player. Yeah, but I ended up getting Trout, like I said, and then I probably regret doing it now because I think I could have got him later, but I got Sano and Encarnacion on the 2-3 turn. I think I reached a little bit on both those guys, but it gives me my power. I'm not concerned about power anymore the rest of the draft with Trout, Sano, and Encarnacion, really.
Yeah, I would have done maybe like an E5. Split
one of them.
Yeah, E5, yeah. DeGrom, E5, Baumgartner, E5, Strasburg, something like that.
Yeah, but then I came back around and I grabbed Jake Arrieta and Tommy Pham, get some speed. I got Lorenzo Cain and Garrett Cole. So I have the speed balance and batting average safety with those guys. I like my offense a lot. I think it's very balanced. My pitching staff is Jake Arrieta, Garrett Cole, Jose Berríos, with Wade Davis as a closer. I don't mind that.
Mm-hmm.
For waiting on a starting pitcher, I think if two out of three of those guys hit like I think they can, I'll be fine.
Let's move on and talk about Domingo Santana, another guy, like I mentioned, that is polarizing, putting up a really good season this year. Currently, his min pick was 71st. His max pick is 89th, so a split of just 18. But he still hasn't gone in two mocks, which is surprising to me. So what are your thoughts on Domingo Santana? Is he being a bit overlooked?
100%. I like him. He's my favorite Brewers outfielder going into next year. The speed came out of nowhere for me. His minor league career high in stolen bases was 12. He's got 15 right now. Might add a couple more before the season's out. 277, 370, 498 slug. It's a fantastic season. He was a highly touted prospect with the Phillies, got dealt to the Astros, and then dealt to the Brewers. I've always liked him a little bit. I was in on him last year, kind of a year early, it seems. And he's put together a fantastic season, and I think he's every bit worthy of going around the 70th pick overall. I think you'd do very well if you can get him around there.
Yeah, I mean, I have concerns that the average won't repeat. That he's much more of a 255, 260
hitter. I think the exit velocity numbers point to batting average staying where it is. I mean, look, you look how high the BABIP is because he hits the ball so hard. He's not an overly fast guy, which is why I kind of surprised by the speed, but he's probably league average. But, you know, every league average guy that can put together 360 BABIPs for two consecutive seasons obviously hits the ball hard. So,
yeah, I still worry that there's a little bit of regression coming there. But at the end of the day, the addition in speed, like you mentioned, one, came out of nowhere, and two, has really pumps up his value.
The product of the Brewers, I think, too. They run more than most.
Well, but they haven't run as nearly as
they much haven't as much as we thought they would, but there's still more than most teams.
I mean, they let me pull up their total stolen bases. They're second this year. Oh, well, actually, they've run a little bit more as of late because they've almost caught the Angels. So they've kicked it up. They were outside the top five not that long ago, and they're back in second place in terms of total stolen bases for the team. So maybe in this stretch run, as they try to claw back in to this playoff race, they've tried to manufacture a few more runs. Maybe the stolen bases takes a little bit of a tick back. Maybe the average takes a little bit of a tick back. But we're talking about a guy that potentially you would probably project next year for 30 home runs, double digit stolen bases, a .260 average.
Yeah,
on a pretty damn good offense. So, you know, 80 to 90 RBIs and runs apiece.
Yep.
I
think he's a high floor guy, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're talking about a guy that should be probably going in the top 60 and hasn't in any of these mocks.
Yeah, I mean, A.J. Pollock or Domingo Santana next
year. Oh, that's Santana. It's not close for me.
Yeah, but look at Pollock went 57 and Santana went 75 in this draft.
Well, Pollock's another guy that is that's polarizing in itself. I mean, he's gone as high as 57th, as low as 66, but he hasn't gone in one of the mocks that's on pick 75 right now.
And I think that's not the ones more accurate.
I'm just glad that maybe there's, you know what I mean, because we talked about him not too long ago, where he went as high as 40th overall in NFBC this year. So I joke that team's not winning anything this year, but I think there are Pollock apologists that, you know, say if this guy can just stay healthy, well, one, I don't think he really can, and two, outside of the one breakout year, he hasn't shown anything to me that makes him a top 50 player. And Santana has.
Yeah, I think another good conversation is Santana or Tommy Pham for next season. I think they're not that far off. Both high exit velocity guys that run, hit for power. So that's an interesting debate.
I think I would take Santana, but I see the argument for Pham. I want to see what the Cardinals as a team look like coming into next year before I jump on the fan bandwagon. It's the skills I buy. For me, I have a real doubt in the organization as a whole.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
Like their decision making processes are just flawed.
Just look who the manager is.
That's exactly what I mean. I mean, you know, Tommy Pham has shown these skills over the course of the last few years, and I know injuries have played a role, but at the end of the day, they just haven't liked him for some reason.
They sent him to AAA to start the year, and he still went 2020. Yeah.
You know, I mean, so, you know, at some point you have to start to question, you know, for the same reason that we're questioning what do we do with Ian Happ, you know, what's the role going to be?
I read something that he's been guaranteed the everyday role in left field, but...
Well,
you know.
I mean, Piscotty and Grichuk were guaranteed everyday roles, too, and, you know, don't get me wrong, they've played themselves out of those, but, I mean, at the end of the day, I just don't trust. I don't trust the manager. I don't trust the front office in St. Louis right now, which is sad because, I mean, you're a Cardinals guy. They've been a great organization for a long time, but, I mean...
Those days are past.
Yeah, I mean, there's something rotten in the state of Denmark.
If the front office gets all this credit for being innovative, but then they hire that guy and allow him to... I mean, he missed the playoffs by one game last year. It's pretty easy to figure out why. Mm-hmm. And that's not, you know, that's not just me being anti him. It's every stat you look at for managers with the control back set up.
Yep.
And I think your concerns are valid.
All right, let's move on to Zach Greinke, who's had a resurgence this year, back to the Zach Greinke we knew and loved before. Real polarizing the mock, a min pick of 37, a max pick of 67, so a 30-pick spread. What are your thoughts on Zach Greinke?
He's the head of the next tier behind those big four for me. He's right up there at the same tier with Strasburg and Bumgarner.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's obviously, I wouldn't say has the highest floor. I think Bumgarner's floor is pretty high still. But, I mean, you got to look at Greinke. The one thing you're not getting is the strikeouts, but you're getting everything else. So I think he's worth a solid investment. He's definitely a top eight starter off the board next year. And I think he's getting drafted as such everywhere. So it's a boring analysis, but I mean, he's still a frontline guy for sure.
Yeah, Greinke's one of those guys, if you miss out on that early tier, I'm more than happy to double tap with like a Robbie Ray.
And a DeGrom and a Greinke or something.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you double tap and you get one guy who's a fireballer, one guy who is going to preserve your ratios for the entire year, and I'm feeling pretty good there about my starting rotation. I think right now I've got him penciled in as my number five pitcher behind the top four.
That's fair. Yeah,
but I think that whole there's a cluster of guys, you know, Severino and Strasburg and you know, Carlos Martinez. I think there's a number of guys you can kind of put in that neighborhood. But Greinke, for me, I think he offers the highest floor. You know, save maybe Carlos Martinez.
I think Greinke's got the way higher floor than him.
Well, we saw the floor last year. It wasn't pretty.
Yeah, you're right. That's
so
true.
I mean, you know, we haven't necessarily. I think the scary part about Martinez is there is fear that that Martinez maybe, you know, gets hurt, and I don't think you have that same fear necessarily with Greinke.
Greinke's a very smart dude, knows how to take care of himself.
Yeah.
I mean, I think.
But,
you know.
I mean, at the end of the day, you know, over the course of the last three seasons, Martinez hasn't, you know, this is Martinez's worst year over the last three seasons. It's a 3.63 ERA, over a strikeout, an inning, three walks flat per nine. I mean, he's, you know, in a down year for Carlos Martinez, he's been damn good.
Yeah, he'll be better next year. I think he's better than lucky with homers. But
yeah. No, he definitely has been. His home run rate almost doubled this year.
Yeah, that'll do it.
So, let's go ahead and let's talk about Miguel Sano. You mentioned him earlier, a guy you took at the 2-3 turn in that draft that you got Mike Trout in. High pick of 30th, that was you. A low pick of 71st for a 41-pick spread. Why are you so high on Miguel Sano?
I think the power upside is crazy. I think he could very well lead the major leagues in home runs next year. Like I said, I went with Trout earlier, and I doubled back with Sano and Encarnacion, which I would do that again. And probably Sano would be the one I would let drop a little bit. But I'm still a big fan. I think, yeah, he strikes out a lot, but he makes up for it with a good walk percent, good walk rate. But the home runs, like I said, 111 games, he still hit 28 homers this year. That's a nice number. 116 last year, 25. So the power's going up, trending in the right direction. Hopefully they move him to DH soon and just let him do that. Keep him on the field. He has a little bit of a ticky-tack injury sometimes, but I'm investing in Sano. It's a little bit of a gamble. Probably not one I would make if there's significant money on the line. But, I mean, as a 24, going to be a 25-year-old, I think the sky's the limit here. He's got Giancarlo Stanton upside, and he's only 25.
Yeah, and I think that's the reason why people will take the early shot on Sano. I don't think I necessarily could pull the trigger as high as you did, but I see the argument for it. I think he's more in the 45 to 50 range for me, and even that feels pushing it a little bit. You know, especially as I start looking at the guys in that 45 to 50 range ADP. I mean, would you rather have a Marcell Ozuna or a Nelson Cruz? I can see, you know, it's hard to make the argument for Sano there.
But I mean, to counterpoint, Sano went pick 30. Will Myers went pick 34. I know where I'm going on that.
Well, you know. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, some of the guys who took Will Myers, you know, two of them reached out to me and said they got some shit for it. Will Myers, while he struggled with the average this year, he's going to go 30-20.
Yeah, I guess that's not how I want to build my roster as far as my first baseman goes, which is, trust me, that's your prerogative and mine, my own kind of taste on doing that. But my first baseman, I always kind of build my roster as a guy that's going to hit 30 to 40 homers and be a lock for that.
But he's going to hit 30 home runs.
Myers, yeah, I wouldn't bank on it next year.
I mean, that's two straight years where he's gone 28 home runs last year. He's got 29 home runs this year. So, like I said, I'm assuming he's going to get to 30 in the last week. He chips in 20 stolen bases this year, 28 last year. Yeah, the average isn't great, but the averages around the league aren't great. I mean, you can actually sacrifice that a little bit. You don't have any worries of playing time. He's put up two consecutive, at least, you know, 650 plate appearance seasons after you add in what he'll get for this week. So, I mean, you got to say the injury risk tag is off. I think Will Myers might be a little bit underrated.
Yeah, agree to disagree.
All right.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm not a Will Myers guy.
I know, and like I get, like, you know, some people just have those guys that they don't like. But, I mean, I think, you know, especially for, you know, there are people out there that really like my strategy of punting batting average. Will Myers fits right into that.
He does. Yeah, definitely.
You know, I would have no problem taking a Will Myers in round three of a 15 team league. So,
yeah,
let's move on. Talk about John Lester, who is interesting and polarizing because he was taken as high as 47th overall in one of the mocks. And in the other three mocks, he has yet to go. So while he doesn't have a min-max spread yet, it's going to be huge. Because
yeah,
we've got one mock already at a pick 125 right now. So, I mean, we're looking at, you know, nearly a 100-point, right now an 80-point spread, pick spread as of right this minute, and it's going to grow by each pick where Lester doesn't go. So, where are you at on John Lester?
I'm kind of completely off this train. Everything you look at is trending in the wrong direction. He's at about one hit per inning now, which isn't bad, but you look at his previous couple seasons, that's a significant difference in that number. Another thing, too, look at the innings pitched per start. This year, he's at 169 innings for 30 games. 202 last year on 32, 205 and 32 over the previous years, right? He's basically a 5-6 inning pitcher now when he takes the ball, as opposed to 7 or 8. And that's a significant difference, especially if you play in quality start formats. I think Lester, he's finally shown he's normally a pillar of health. This year, he finally ran into some health problems. I'm not saying they're going to necessarily repeat, but he's not. He's not the under the radar fantasy aces he has been. He's definitely down the board for me. He's more of a low end number two, high end number three guy for me from the fantasy standpoint. And that's a big drop off for this year. And that's even including the team he plays for is pretty good. So take that into consideration. I'm still a little bit down on Lester.
Yeah, the fastball's been really bad this year. Drop in velocity, drop in movement. The changeup has been hasn't been good. The curveball hasn't been good. Really, he's got a cutter that's performing well, and that's really about it. He's given up too many home runs because when he does locate in the zone, he's leaving it up and it's getting smashed. He's pitching. He pitched well tonight against the Cardinals, but I mean, for the most part, you can't really trust when to use him and when not to. I mean, you had him get shellacked by, in his last five starts before tonight, he got shellacked by Tampa Bay, by Atlanta, by Cincinnati.
Yeah, I wonder, this has been a very Cub-centric podcast today, but I wonder if they're going into the postseason with him as a number one. I'd be a little bit worried about that.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of reasons for the Cubs to be worried heading into the postseason. I don't think he is the main culprit.
They're still going to win the whole thing.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are. I'll bet anything you want.
Just
because they have to shit on me some more, so they're going to win again.
we'll figure something out offline. But I think there are a lot of reasons to be really, really discouraged. I don't think you should be taking him as a top 30 starter coming into next year unless something comes out that you can pinpoint as this is the reason why he was so bad. You know, if at the end of the year we hear, okay, he had bone spur issues in his elbows, we're taking those out, he'll be fine. Or there's some sort of nagging issue, but by all accounts and by what he's been saying, he's fine. He's just not performing, and that's an issue because, like I said, the velocity is down, the movement's not the same on the pitches, he's having trouble locating on the edges, he's getting crushed by the home run. His home run per nine is at 1.33. It hasn't been that high since 2007.
Wow, that's crazy.
So,
and it's kind of surprising Rich Hill went before him. Just with the injury concerns, you know, people are worried about that. And Lester's a high floor guy, and Rich Hill's the opposite of that. I'm a big Rich Hill guy, too, so I probably would have taken him if he was there.
We had this discussion in our Friends Fantasy Benefits chat about Rich Hill and whether or not he was a disappointment.
No, absolutely not. No way.
And for me, you know, it depends on your format because he loses a ton of value in quality starts leagues. Because he didn't go, you know, six innings in a lot of his starts this year, especially towards the middle where they were kind of, you know, only letting him pitch like three or four innings with the blister issues. But I think pitching as a whole has been such a disappointment that I don't think there are, you know, if Rich Hill, I believe, was like the 30th starting pitcher off the board, I can't imagine that he didn't finish ahead of half of those guys that were drafted ahead of him.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So. Yep. I mean, I think there's arguments to be made on both sides. I think in a standard wins league, you know, he returned value. You know, I don't think you made a huge profit on him, like some people, you know, were arguing that, you know, he had the potential to do. But I think at the end of the day, you at least returned value. I think you lost value in a quality starts league where he was not what you were looking for necessarily, but. I can see the argument of taking Rich Hill over John Lester for next year. You know,
yeah,
he's got the better stadium to pitch in. He's got the better offense behind him. He's got the worst division opponents to pitch against. You know, in San Diego and the Giants. I think there are reasons to take Rich Hill. I'm not going to own either of them next year.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
All right. Let's see. Let's talk real quick about Buster Posey before we finish out. Posey has had a pretty good year when you look at the triple slash, but then you realize he's had like 10 home runs this year. Not so good. Now, it's hard to kind of quantify what that means in terms of his overall production. He's had 12 home runs. He's stolen six bases, tying a career high. So the home runs, the power output is disappointing, especially when you add in the 57 RBIs, 64 RBIs, 57 runs scored. But in 313, 394, 451, pretty decent triple slash for a catcher. So where should Posey be going?
In my mock draft, I'm in. He went with his third catcher off the board. I definitely think the reign of him being a top fantasy catcher are over.
Yes. Gary Sanchez takes that.
But I do worry. This is a two-catcher format league, so he's extremely valuable in a format like this. But I think in a one-catcher format, I think if you use an early pick on him, say top 30, you are going to be so far behind the eight ball in the power department that it might not be pro. You know, power is easy to make up, but you're taking a significant loss in power if you take Posey with a top 30 pick.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think in a two-catcher format, I look for him in the fifth round if he's there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think especially in an OBP format, And he really, even in an average format, I mean, what he offers, comparatively speaking, in the ratio categories for hitters, is so far and above what every other catcher, for the most part, is going to do for you. Of the guys that are going to be taken below him, then I'm totally okay buying it. I think the question really becomes, who would you rather have, Wilson Contreras or Buster Posey?
I'll take Contreras, but that's just how I probably would build my team. But you can't go wrong with either one.
It's hard because I am a Giants homer. I mean, you know,
and I'm an anti Contreras team. So,
but I think what we've seen this year with Contreras, one is that I think that they're committed to him being a full time catcher, which is important. But yeah. Two, he's hitting .275. Like, that's huge, you know, mm-hmm. for a guy.
And he's
like
got
him.
He's got room to grow too.
Mm-hmm. He's got room to grow in I think every department.
I think he's going to be outfield eligible too.
Has he played enough games in the outfield to be eligible?
I know he did last year. Let's see.
I don't believe he did this year, but I'm checking right now. No, he didn't this year.
No,
so.
Not even close. Okay, yeah. Never mind.
I mean, he's virtually just a catcher, but he adds in games at other positions, which has value. You know, they'll get him at bats. You know, more at bats at other positions, which adds value. I think the power potential is immense. I think he's a guy that theoretically could be a 30 home run guy with like a .270 average at the catcher position, which is so valuable in this day and age, especially yeah. with how awful the catcher position has been. That you have to take the shot on a guy like Contreras, who's only 25 years old, and only really in his, you know, will only be in his second full season at the major leagues next year. So, it's Sanchez, Contreras, and then Posey. You know, Contreras in the fifth round range, Posey sixth, seventh round range for me in a 15-team, two catcher format. I'm not touching any of these guys in a one catcher league because I'll just punt catcher 100%. every year,
yep.
One of them provides a huge amount of value somewhere, but in a two catcher format, I'm not shying away from Posey, but he's third on the list now.
Yeah, I thought the way catcher went down was very interesting in this draft. We're looking at, I want to say, 8 catchers already off the board with pick 118.
Yeah,
which seems like a lot.
Well, it's a two catcher format. That's why.
It is, but I mean, there's still, you know, some decent guys on the board compared to some guys that went, but I'm not touching catcher for a while. I'm going to see how that looks out for my squad. But
yeah, I kind of want to see what the bottom barrels of the catching pool looks like in this depth of the league for next year. So
hopefully I can be the lucky guy to scoop up this year's version of like Alex Avila on waivers.
Or a Mike Zunino.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, you look at Zunino's numbers, and I mean, he is, I don't necessarily want to say quietly, but I mean, dude's hitting .248 with 24 home runs, hit another one tonight.
Yeah, you're on the Zunino train. I guess the guy I'm looking to get is Wellington Castillo. If I get him as my catcher, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, me too. All right, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. Matt, tell me where people can reach you and what you're working on.
Sure, MDTompFWFB. You know, just baseball all the time on that Twitter feed, but pretty pumped. Off-season stuff for us is pretty exciting. I love our off-season stuff, and we're almost down to the time to do those prospect pods, buddy.
Yeah, a couple more months, and we'll be pumping out 30 prospect pods. And if you weren't with us for the beginning of the season this year, if you joined halfway through the year, the preseason coverage we give is unlike any other podcast website out there. We do 30 team previews. And 30 prospect pods that come to you in 30 days at the beginning of January. Pretty much January 2nd, we release our first one. We may even start a little bit earlier. Maybe start at the end of 2017, but we'll see how it goes. But you get a team preview pod and then a prospect mini pod with me and Matt for 30 straight days. And so we make sure you're super prepared. And that's before we start getting into position previews. And getting into strategy, we absolutely crush it in the preseason for baseball. So definitely, and we go all off season long too. Maybe not, you know, two or three times a week, but we get you at least one podcast a week rest of the year, and then come at you full force as soon as it turns to 2018. So definitely stick around with us. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendswithfantasybenefits@gmail.com. Please give us a rate and review. It really helps us out, especially if it's the five-star variety. And if you do, make sure you get entered to win one of our awesome prizes, which could include a Friends of Fantasy Benefits t-shirt or mug or other cool things. Maybe Matt will buy you a beer, you know, something like that.
Maybe.
You know, definitely keep giving those reviews. It really, really helps us out, gets us noticed so that we can continue offering this content absolutely free. You can read all my stuff on Fangraphs. We write 4 to 5 times a week, though I've been slacking quite a bit as of late, because I'm writing this gigantic article over at Fantasy Alarm for football, where a lot of my football content goes. Also have more football content and baseball content on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. You can also hear me sometimes in the background and making snide remarks on the Sleeper and the Bust podcast, where I've been brought on as a producer. Sometimes you just don't hear me at all. I'm just the guy who makes it sound better than it
used to. You got to keep them guys in check over there.
Yeah, exactly. So you can hear that. Usually I'm on the Thursday show, but I've also done a weekend show with Jason as well. So definitely check out all that. Oh, then plus, yeah, the Tout Wars Hour, Thursdays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, or sorry, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. 6 to 8 Pacific, on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Matt joins us from time to time. I'm trying to get Mike on this week, but we'll see if that works with his crazy ass schedule. So, yeah, that's
you have an uncanny ability to make me sound lazy.
Yeah, no, it's I definitely hustle. That's for damn sure. I'm working my ass off.
No doubt. Hardest working person in fantasy, I think.
But I definitely will try to hopefully figure out some ways to maybe make it a little easier on me coming into next season. But we got to finish out this year first before I can do that. So
I want a 1,000-word article next year on each individual baseball game for a preview.
You like that idea?
Yeah, you should do it for each game.
Yeah, it's been pretty rough what I've been doing for football. For those who don't know, I've been writing.
They are great, though. They are. I'm not just saying that because I'm talking to you. They are so in-depth and thorough, and you know, Chris Thompson, I got that from you. So.
Yeah, I mean, when Howard Bender hired me to come do the article for Fantasy Alarm, I thought he was like really hooking me up as a friend and as a buddy, because him and I, you know, have hung out outside of like industry
payback
stuff.
Payback for the barf league.
Yeah, this was obviously some sort of cruel joke.
Nah, I'm just all jokes aside, it's very much worth checking out. So if you haven't, you're missing out.
All right, that's gonna wrap us up for Matt and myself. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.